Let's bring him into the art classes at Bacon College. Where is Bacon?
It's in Muskogee.
In Muskogee, all mm-hmm. right. And then who were his teachers?
A.C. Blue Eagle and Woody Crumbo were the art instructors there at the time. And they were very encouraging to him. They told him that they couldn't really teach him a lot at that point because he already had everything pretty much going. And so they cleaned out a storage room there at the art department at Bacon and said, here, you take this and use it for a studio and create however you want to. So that's what he did at Bacon.
And we should say A.C. Blue Eagle.
Yes.
He was an artist, educator, dancer. Mm-hmm. And his birth name was actually Alexander C. McIntosh.
Really?
Right.
Okay. I didn't realize he was a McIntosh.
Right. And then Woody Crumbo was Potawatomi, an artist, Native American, flute player. And we actually have his story is told by Manisa mm-hmm. Halsey Crumbo.
Yes.
And of course, he worked for Mr. Gilchrist, as did your father.
Right.
So after he left Bacon, is that when he got married?
He and Mom got married, and they moved to Oktaha. That's where they had their first three babies. And then the World War II started, and Dad couldn't fight in the war because he didn't have these fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they moved up here to Locust, where Mom's family was, and there was a powder plant in Pryor, ammunition plant over there. So Daddy worked over there a few years of the war.
So we're talking 41, 42?
Yeah, they moved up here in 1940.
40.
Well, they got married in 1940, so they moved up here in like 41, I think.
He actually went to work for Thomas Gilchrist in 1948. So what did he do in those years from 44, 45?
He worked for Mr. Gilchrist from 47 to 49, 3 years, as an artist in residence. Before that, he worked at the powder plant. So he worked at I don't know how many years he worked at the powder plant, the ammunition plant there prior. But from there, he went to Mr. Gilchrist.
And Woody Crumbo introduced him, didn't he,
mm-hmm.
to Thomas Gilchrist?
Yes.
And then, so did he live there on the grounds?
He did not. Because he didn't want to live in town. He wanted to live over here, away from the big city. And he didn't want to raise his kids in a big city. So they stayed here, and he stayed over there some because they didn't have a car. They didn't have a car until 1956. So he would catch rides and work over there. Sometimes he would stay there during the week, and he'd come home on weekends.
Manisa lived on the grounds, I believe, mm-hmm. she talked about it.
Mr. Gilchrist wanted Mom and Dad to live over there and actually to run a boys' home is what Mr. Gilchrist wanted them to come. And they just, you know, they already had enough children. So they just didn't want to live in the city. They wanted to live. They'd grown up, you know, in farms, and that's what they wanted. Daddy he loved animals. He talked to all the animals. He wanted every kind of animal he could find. You know, we had all kinds of animals.
Did he talk about working for Thomas Gilchrist?
Not a lot that I remember, because I was I wasn't born until 53. But I had asked him a lot of questions because I followed him around all the time. There was a man there, Charlie Breto, and he taught Dad how to make plaster molds. And he and Mr. Breto did a lot of plaster work for Mr. Gilchrist. And the first Gilchrist, they had tiles in the front entryway, and Dad and Mr. Breto had made those tiles, plaster tiles for the entrance to the museum there.
Okay.
Learned all that from Mr. Breto at Gilchrist.
Okay. I have a letter here that your father wrote to Mr. Gilchrist.
Okay.
And this was January 8th, 1947. Dear Mr. Gilchrist, at last I am beginning to make a little headway, I think. I am carving on that piece of ebony wood, and if I can get anything out of it worth looking at, I will have a lot more confidence in myself than I have right now. The reason I'm reading so slow here is that this was very light ink. Mm-hmm. Included is a drawing of an eagle dancer that I hope you will be interested in and hope to carve for you when I get more good wood for it.
Mr. Gilchrist told him that he brought this piece of ebony, which he said was the hardest wood in the world. He said, if you can carve something out of this, then that'll show me that you're a wood sculptor. So I don't know if you've seen that piece at Gilchrist. He did a buffalo that had been killed, laying on its side. And there was an arrow. He carved a little arrow, and he put it in the buffalo. And people kept stealing the arrow out of the buffalo, so they finally just took it out. But anyway, that's what he carved out of that piece of ebony. It was a dying buffalo.
So was that his audition?
I guess. That's the story I was told, that Mr. Gilchrist said, if you can make something out of this wood, then you're good. So right. I guess that's kind of what started it with him.
Right. Willard had his own distinct style, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
And it was influenced by other styles.
Well, yeah, kind of an Art Deco, maybe, mm-hmm. Style, because it's very free-flowing. Some of it's very detailed, but he liked to elongate, like, the horse's legs or the different things. He would just stylize it like that, more like that Art Deco look.